While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the Eye.
Good afternoon, Namibia. This right here is On The Reading News Analysis on Eagle FM. I am your host, Nafa Happy Juju, and I shall be keeping you company from now up until 14:30. Now, in a period where public trust, economic resilience, and institutional accountability are under sharper focus than ever, the value of clear thinking and credible information cannot be overstated. Every weekday from 1300 hours to 1430, we step beyond the surface of the headlines to examine the structural forces shaping our nation, from fiscal policy and public expenditure to governance reforms and service delivery performance, because understanding the direction of our economy requires more than reaction. It requires reflection. Now, across Namibia, from the policy corridors of Windhoek to the fishing hubs of the coast, the agricultural heartlands in the north and the towns of the south, citizens are asking important questions. Are public resources being allocated efficiently? Are development plans translating into visible changes? Are institutions responding effectively to the needs of the people? And today, we take a deliberate pause to interrogate how national priorities move from legislation to implementation, how budget figures transform into classrooms, clinics, and roads, and how economic indicators ultimately reflect or fail to reflect lived realities. Now, On The Radar is not a platform for noise. It is a space for measured, balanced, and solution-driven dialogue. Here, experts, policymakers, analysts, and engaged citizens meet on common ground, evidence. We believe rigorous debate strengthens democracy when it is informed, respectful, and anchored in facts. As Namibia navigates complex economic choices and heightened public expectation, we remain committed to one principle, that is, clarity in conversation leads to credibility in governance. So stay tuned as we unpack the issues shaping our development path thoughtfully, responsibly, and without distraction. This right here is On The Reading News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Let's get right into today's top stories. The Namibia Statistics Agency, also known as NSA, presented the Commerce 2023 Census Regional Profile to the Commerce Regional Council yesterday, underscoring the critical role of official statistics in guiding evidence-based economic planning and development. Now, speaking during the presentation, Statistician General and CEO of NSA, Alex Shimafini, emphasized that reliable and up-to-date data is fundamental to effective policy making. Census results provide government institutions, regional authorities, businesses, and development partners with a factual basis for allocating resources, planning infrastructure, and designing social and economic programs. The Commerce Region, home to Namibia's capital city, that is Windhoek, remains the country's administrative and economic hub. As such, demographic shifts, employment trends, household composition, education levels, and housing conditions in the region have far-reaching national implications. Now, while the full dataset contains detailed indicators, the regional profile presented to the council report covers population growth trends and density patterns, urbanization dynamics, particularly around Windhoek, youth population proportions with implications for education and job creation, employment and unemployment indicators, household income and living conditions, access to basic services such as water, sanitation, electricity and health facilities, housing structure types and settlement patterns, including informal settlement. It went detail as to constituency level. Now, the rapid urban migration continues to place pressure on housing, infrastructure, transport systems and public services in the Comas region. The data is expected to help local authorities and constituencies better plan for land servicing, road networks, schools, healthcare facilities and economic zones. Now, the economic planning depends on accurate baseline data. Without reliable statistics, infrastructure projects may be under or oversized. Education and health services may not match population demand. Labor market interventions may miss key demographics. Budget allocations may not reflect actual needs. Therefore, the Namibia Statistics Agency reiterated that the census is not merely a headcount, but a strategic planning tool. Now, for a region that contributes significantly to Namibia's gross domestic product, or GDP, informed decision-making is essential to sustain growth, reduce inequality, and manage urban expansion effectively. Therefore, the Comas Regional Council welcomed the presentation. Now, of course, let's pause right here and get a thorough understanding of why statistics, actual statistics, are needed for guiding factual planning for any country or any economy. Let's pause right here now. We get hold of our economy. Stay tuned right here on the Reader News Analysis.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwepo tete okoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Kono ngeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu honda doi inawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe faa omarudi vitayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijemo ili nawa. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafelane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back now to debunk about the importance of statistics, and not just any statistics, factual statistics. I'm joined by economist Abraham Aita. A very good afternoon to you, sir, and welcome to On The Reader News Analysis.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well, thank
and
you.
Also good afternoon to the listeners. Very happy to be here today.
It's a pleasure to actually host you today. Now, of course, Mr. Abraham, you being an economist, let's start off from that. How would you say factual statistics help in planning for any economy? I think I don't want to restrict it to just Namibia's economy, for any economy.
Okay, so usually in economics, we have a term that says data is key and also data doesn't lie. So data plays a fundamental role in the development and growth of an economy because it provides a complete and reliable picture, firstly, of the country's population, because remember, a country, an economy is built off of its people. It actually, with the data, it reveals the size, the distribution, the age, the gender, the structure, the level of employment, and also the living condition. Now, with the data, it enables us to actually determined between what producers should be producing and how then consumers take up these products, how they should be consuming the product. But also when we move away from producers and consumers, it also just enables the government to actually create better decisions, because without data, the government would then be relying on estimates, which can then lead to poor decision making and also the inefficient use of resources. So it's quite large in terms of what the data can do, but especially in terms of decision making, it helps the economy in the long run and also enables us to make better decisions.
That is so true. That is not so true. Now, of course, still on the economic aspect, what would you say, Mr. Ibrahim, are the economic risks of rapid urbanization? Because the statistics did reveal that in 1991, urbanization and rural population were almost fairly, actually, the rural was higher than the urban. But now, in 2025, last year, urban population and rural population are almost 50-50. So what economic risks of this does it have in Windhoek if planning does not keep the pace?
Congestion of people. So what we have is we have a lot of people that are actually residing in the same area. And but you also, when in terms of this, you need to look at it holistically. You need to have a full picture. You can't blame the people that are actually moving towards the city because they are actually moving for better development, career enhancement, better living standards. So that's why they are moving now. What happens is this creates a congestion where we have so many people living in the same area. It reduces the level of affordability. I mean, it increases the level of affordability because now the demand is so high, you need to cater to a large audience of people. So that is the risk that is there. Is the services become very expensive. Health services, in terms of the people they were meant to allocate to, now it also becomes limited because you have so many people to tend to. So ideally, what you would then want to do is to say focus redevelopment in the rural areas so that you can actually keep people in the rural areas. That is the problem that we are facing right now. People are actually moving into cities because of the quality of life, employment opportunities, and all of that.
Mm-hmm. In this aspect, would you say perhaps maybe they should focus on bringing better services to the rural area? Of course, that's one of them, to ensure that people stay in the rural area, or also upgrade or update or invest more also in the urban area to accommodate everyone at the end of the day. Because obviously, moving and all that is up to individual, it's individual choices. Which one would you say from an economics perspective, perhaps they should tackle now at this particular point in time?
What you want is development shouldn't just be centered in one area. It shouldn't just be centered in the city. Mm-hmm. So the government needs to create incentives for private individuals, let's say business owners, to actually set up businesses in the informal sectors. They should actually encourage them. So one way of encouraging could be subsidies, could be reducing the level of tax. So this will enable people to actually then move into the rural areas and then build and create employment opportunities, because the whole idea behind moving to the city is because of the opportunities that are not in the rural areas. But if you are bringing opportunities to people, if you are bringing technology to people, if you are bringing employment to people, then there is no need for them to move. Instead, development can then be centered around there, to say, okay, we have development in this area, which is then also benefiting this population. So there is no need for the population to then move to the city. If it's to move to the city, it should be a choice. It should not be out of convenience because you feel you are inconvenienced or you feel that there are no better opportunities. It should be a choice made not based of what is lacking in that area.
Correct. Now, speaking also on the importance of statistics, I do remember last year when the Ministry of Education allocated funds to regions. I do remember Comas, although had received the highest because of the number of learners here, Huanguena was one of, I think, was the second highest in terms of funding because it has more it has more a greater density of the population. Now, really, statistics like this help us because generally you would say, why is Huanguena receiving more than perhaps Karas or than perhaps Omusati? Then you have an understanding of why, because then the population there is greater compared to. Could you perhaps give an example of any country, or I don't know, just a thorough example of where you would say here statistics were used and this is the result and this is now the positive outcome or the planning that has now resulted from that from your economics books, any one of those examples?
Okay, the example I'm going to give doesn't necessarily relate to the money being distribute or funds being distributed in a manner where you see a certain region has been given more than another, but I'm going to relate this to Norway. So Norway is Norway was one of the countries where they actually determined that they had a lot of resources in terms of renewable energy and also oil. Mm-hmm. But however, what they did in this case was that they created a fund. They created this fund to ensure that the fund actually caters to their people. So in Norway, basic education, tertiary education, that is a basic human right. Everybody is supposed to have a certain degree of education. They should be taught. Mm. And it's mainly due to the fund that they created. So it's a sovereign fund. It's actually meant to cater to people. It isn't a thing of actually having to segment to say a certain region received this much, no, a certain region. And when we draw back to this to say that we had people in Huanguena who actually got more than people perhaps in commerce due to the population size, that is not the right way to go about it. Yes, we do have more people in Huanguena compared maybe to Karas and all of that, but still what you want is to ensure that everybody in the population gets the same opportunity that the next person in Comas gets, the next person in Huanguena gets. Mm-hmm. Everybody should be equipped exactly with the same opportunity. And education is key. Having a trained and knowledgeable population actually only encourages innovation. It encourages us to come up with new ideas. And that was the whole concept lying behind Norway, to say, okay, we have discovered we have this many resources. Let's make it a human right to ensure that each and every child that is born in this country is benefiting from these resources, gets from the sovereign fund. And it's so many countries that do those things, especially the European countries.
Mm-hmm. Interesting example. Now, it did reveal the statistics also revealed that in terms of a social grant and pension, old age pension that is of 60 years and above, about 16,182 Namibian pensioners receive a grant. I'm not sure it's 1,300 per month. Now, this is something that you say?
No. Please proceed.
Okay. Now, this is something that other countries, some few other African countries are not exactly doing. And when you do visit other countries, you do realize that, yes, of course, there's room for improvement, but we need to give credit where it is due and give people flowers while they're still alive. Now, I'm referring to Namibians fairly being able to feed themselves even in old age, whereas in other countries you see a 70-year-old looking for employment in order to put bread on the table and be able to look after their grandchildren for that matter, perhaps because their children have died. Now, let's talk about how this can contribute to a country's economy, for that matter. If yes, money is being forked out to be given to the pensioners, but keeping your citizens well able to maintain themselves, how is that beneficial to the economy?
Okay, so with the inflow of money into homes, different homes,
yeah,
this actually keeps the economy on its feet. So what you have is you actually have someone who is, most of the people that are actually getting these grants, actually they use them to tailor to basic needs. So the element of you actually being able to buy food and just cater for your basic needs, this element is actually being addressed by the government, which is a very good initiative from them. And also it actually just enables us to further continue empowering our orphans, especially those that do not have anyone to actually look after them. So it continues pumping money into the economy. It continues the circular flow of money into the economy, in the sense that money is not leaving the country. It's still flowing within the country.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a positive effect. So the spending, actually, this spending, it empowers people. It enables them to get services they do not get. It enables them to healthcare services. Because when you go to a hospital, I'm not sure, I think it's $6 to pay for,
yeah,
for just a service. So it actually enables you to afford that, enables you to actually buy, like I said, food in the house. And sometimes you find it's actually one granny that is living with 6-7 grandkids, and they are actually just benefiting off of that grant. Now, yes, they should be grateful. Is there more that could be done? Yes, there is more that could be done. Have we done better than other countries? I tell you what, you only get to see that Namibia has done better than other countries when you leave this country.
Mm.
But if you haven't left the borders of Namibia, you we haven't done much. But when you leave, it's actually where you tend to see that actually the quality of life in Namibia is way, 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 way better than other countries.
True.
If you compare the quality of the quality of life in Namibia compared to that of countries like Mozambique, you actually realize that we actually have it way, way better.
Way
here.
Better.
So with the grants have actually been a very great initiative from the government. Is there more that could be done? Yes, there is always more that could be done. But that is a plus for us as a country, and it keeps the money flowing in the economy. So everybody is benefiting. Be it moves from your grandmother, it moves to that guy who has a small shop in the neighborhood. The money then moves from that guy who then pays the lady that is selling in the shop.
Mm.
So the money is still flowing here. It's changing hands, but it's still in the economy.
Mm, indeed. Ibrahimita, thank you so much for making time for us. But let me give you this opportunity to perhaps say your last words as an economist overall in regards to the release of the statistics.
Okay. Now, I think these statistics, NSA is the custodian of statistics in Namibia.
Indeed.
I think with the data they've actually released, it now paints a better picture, and it will enable for effective economic planning and policy formulation. The idea is that with the data that has been released, at least we can benchmark and see how far along we have come in terms of actually achieving our national development plans, and also how far are we from Vision 2030. Is there more forecasting that needs to be done? And this forecasting will enable us to actually set realistic economic targets. So the data should be used by policymakers to anticipate future challenges. Population growth prior to the census. Remember, Namibia was a population of 2 million people.
Mm.
Now we are 3 million. So I think with this data, it enables us then to anticipate population growth, urbanization. People are not going to stay in the village forever. we need to actually use this data to see where are the gaps, where are the employment gaps, where do we need to redevelop infrastructure, where is there a clinic, let's say for example, is there a clinic in poor, should more be done in terms of getting public utilities to those people. I think the information has been helpful. It will help us with better and economic planning.
Indeed.
And hopefully the policymakers do come on board with this.
Yeah. Abraham, thank you so much for making time for us right here on The Reader.
With the best prices at WB. Get 500 gram Bokomo cornflakes for $31.99, 2 kg nice rice for only $34.99, 1.5 kg real good mixed chicken portions for $79.99, and 10 kg Bokomo fat cook flour for just $137.99. See more February specials at vurmanbrock.com. We care.
Are you still there?
Yes.
Okay. So I was saying thank you so much for making time for us right here on The Reader News Analysis. I really do always appreciate whenever guests, an economist, come and take their time out of their busy schedule to educate us and help us understand also the importance of things like this.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Okay.
Lovely day ahead.
And that was Abraham Aita, an economist, also helping us to debunk why it's necessary. Statistics are necessary. Of course, let's pause right here shortly and we'll be back not long from now so we can just get into a little bit of what NSA actually revealed in that Commerce Regional 2026.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. And now the statistics for Commerce Region 2023 census. Pardon me. Earlier I said 2026. Population and dynamics. The population of Commerce has about 494,605 residents, making it the most populous region in Namibia. And the population growth is that the region's population grew at an estimated annual rate of 3.1%, increasing urbanization. About 98.3% of the population lives in urban areas, reflecting the strong urban pool of Windhoek and its peri-urban communities. And as you heard from economist Abraham, the people will definitely continue to move from the rural to the urban area, that is, to look for greener pastures. And yeah, we can't stop them. I think we just need to balance and equalize and, of course, also implement or also improve Commerce Region and expand the outcost in building more homes to accommodate the people. And of course, without lagging behind in terms of rural development, to also keep those who want to stay in the rural area, because we can't all be in the capital city. We do need farmers. We do need horticultures. We do need those who will be into agriculture for the benefit of us all, the Namibians. Now, in terms of population density, Commerce is approximately 13.4 people per square kilometer. I would want to say something. Nonetheless, still, Nonetheless, the fact that we live in the capital city of Namibia, that is Windhoek, and we're relatively able to move opposed to other places where the area is, the density is not as expanded compared to the number of people that are there. Now, the youthful population, 10.6% of that are under 5 years old, 17.4% are aged 5 to 14, 67.8% are in the working age group, that is 15 to 59, and 4.2% are 60 years and older. In terms of the working group, NSA counts from 15 to 59, and yes, the Statistician General Alex Shimwafeni did say, yes, you do get people debating about the age of 15, whether somebody can be employed at the age of 15, but that is also counted as the working group of 15 to 59. A 15-year-old can actually hold down a job. Now, this age profile has important implications for school planning, for job creation, and social services. Now, households, there are about 144,460 households in the Commerce region. Each household is an average of about 3.3%. That is an average, okay? Household composition, 45.2% of households are headed by women and 54.8% are headed by men. In regards to the labor market, the labor force participation is about 64% of people aged 15 and above are active in the labor force, while employment versus unemployment of that active population, 65.6% are employed and 34.4% are unemployed, a significant figure that highlights economic pressure in the region. Among those not actively seeking work, a very high 94.6% are discouraged job seekers, meaning they want work but they are not actively searching, often due to lack of opportunities. Commerce region has 100 schools serving 73,302 pupils, indicating the size of the educational system required to serve a fast-growing urban region. Now, the large urban majority underscores urgent needs in housing, in transport, in water and sanitation. A young working age majority means job creation, also means skills development and education access are central economic priorities. High unemployment, also indicating, including discouraged workers, points to structural challenges in the labor market that must be addressed through policy implementation. Now, of course, let's pause right here now. This is On the Radar News Analysis. Should you be interested in also helping to debunk the statistics, 083-288-401 is the number in studio. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. I must give out my own personal number, but interestingly, one time, I did hear the boss tell us that we're not being so clever, not giving out our numbers, because there are times when somebody has important aspects that they would want to tackle right here on the radar or perhaps on Life Lessons. So 0813981999, that is my own personal number. Should you want to also engage on news analysis right here on the radar, perhaps you are an active listener, you would want to participate one day, 08081398199. That is my own personal number. Now, of course, let's pause right here, take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back with more right here on the Real News Analysis. To stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM,
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe udete ofoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Okwene ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu omafelane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. On the 16th of February, the Namibia Civil Aviation Authority held the Women in Aviation event at their head office. Now, in attendance were women in the Aviation Forum, who aims to celebrate women that make strides in the aviation industry. The Namibia Civil Aviation Authority hosted women from the industry and from the ESAF country director, providing words of motivation to fellow women and also for them to continue in this most majorly, what they say, a male-dominated field. Now, speaking at the event was the executive director of the Namibia Civil Aviation Authority, that is Mr. Toscar Sem. Let's now take a listen to the speech she delivered.
The incredible journey that has brought me to today's moment. My remarks will focus on my personal journey, which has led to me of where I am today. I joined the aviation industry, certainly from airport management perspective, on the 1st of November 2004. That will tell you the duration that I have been within the aviation industry up until to date, where I'm serving close to 4 years as an executive director of the Namibia Civil Aviation Authority. My journey has not been easy. It was a path filled with challenges, setbacks, and also joyful moments. What I can actually take pride of is the journey that has taught me the values of perseverance, self-belief, and determination. Today, I am a proud woman of Namibia, as we have drawn the Women in Aviation Forum from the African Civil Aviation Commission, of which I'm proud to mention that my executive of the Air Navigation Services is serving on the
a WIA Women in Negotiations Steering Committee. And this has really led to us to co-opt to work with Madam Monsi as the chairperson of the Namibian Women in Aviation Steering Committee, for Namibia to have a platform where we as women can really gather together and engage on strategic interventions, support each other, mentor each other, and just share those moments and our experiences in aviation. I'm very proud to announce that during the ICAO Assembly, as how it was put through the introduction,
let's pause here now, make room for a scheduled commercial break. It won't be too long, and we'll be back shortly to continue. Stay tuned right here on The Reader News Analysis.
Why pay more when you can pay less at USave stores? Enjoy nutritious and delicious meals for the whole family. 2 kilogram real good frozen mixed chicken portions for only 99.99 Namibian dollars. 3 kilos Polana pasta, just 74.99 Namibian dollars. 500 grams of Romy 37% fat spread, just 14.99 Namibian dollars. 700 milliliter crystal gold tomato sauce, just 24.99 Namibian dollars. USave, where good food costs less.
Let's now resume from here in hearing from Ms. Tosca Sem, the Executive Director of the Namibia Civil Aviation Authority.
I did serve as the Deputy Chairperson of the Technical Committee, but Africa is equally proud that we even had our Director General of Cameroon, who was elected as the Vice President of the ICAO Assembly, and equally also the Director General of Sierra Leone. She was also elected to be a deputy chair to serve on the Finance and Administration Committee during the last assembly, which was held in Canada, Montreal. One of the key pointers that has led to my success was really the ability to adapt and to evolve. I've always been willing to take on new challenges and to learn new skills. We have just heard from Madam Makwani that you must create opportunities. Take advantage of those opportunities, because that is what will take you to greater heights. I've constantly sought out for opportunities to expand my skill set and increase my value to the organization. A number of you would ask, why have I not been appointed to serve in this role? What is the issue? And at times it's like, why am I the one nominated to deliver the speech? Yes, that inner you would give you the fight not to take it up. But listen to your inner you, explore those opportunities, take those bold steps, as it's only as you navigate yourself through life that you can strengthen your capability and test your capability. It's also equally of importance to identify what are your strengths, what are your weaknesses, and most importantly, work on your weaknesses. Nobody's perfect. How do you navigate around that? I can easily confirm, for those that know me from my childhood, I grew up as a very shy person. I had stage fright. I could not even utter a word. Anybody would say anything to me. But those who knew me at the time when I was a girl, and those who know me today, will not compare who I am. It's not about where you grew up. It's not about the culture. It's not about your history. You are the one to determine your destiny. And by determining your destiny, how do you do it? Most importantly, is self-appreciation, self-awareness. Explore yourself. Who are you? How can you navigate yourself through? And it's important for you to build a network of mentors. Even myself, I have mentors as we speak. I cannot navigate leading an organization such as the Civil Aviation Authority without a mentor. Get yourself a coach and have time to talk to your colleagues who can help you to navigate your ups and downs in terms of your career. And not only your career, but yourself as an individual, yourself in the space of being a woman, yourself in the space of being a caring mother, yourself in a space of how you can support the community? And most importantly, how do you navigate yourself in the aviation industry? We have heard and we have noted, as statistics have spoken for itself, that this is a male-dominant industry. Yes, we fight there in the boardrooms, but the important part, what legacy are you going to leave for the women that will come after you? You should ask yourself, have a purpose for life. Have a determination. Don't be afraid to take risk, neither challenges. Push yourself beyond their comfort zone. At the time, once you find yourself you are comfortable, tell yourself something is wrong. Always reach out to those opportunities that will keep you awake, that will give you the drive and the energy for you to become impactful in life. Continuing going forward,
also speaking at the event is Lucy Bungua, ESAF Regional Director, and she is from Kenya. Let's take a listen.
The excitement and the passion that I have actually seen in this room. I Tosca, forget you. Take yourself there and make sure you are not, you're so indispensable that you remain at that table. So ICAO's commitment to gender equality. At the International Civil Aviation Organization, gender equality is not a side initiative. It is embedded within our strategic priorities. Our gender equality program aligned with the UN Accountability Frameworks and Sustainable Development Goal number 5 seeks to mainstream gender equality across all ICAO's operations and throughout the global aviation ecosystem. So we measure, we have policies, we really make it, you know, a determined effort to put women up there. You see our adverts are always encouraging women to apply. When you have two people who are equal in interview process, once two people score the same, and one is a man and one is a woman, you pick the woman. That is our policy, by the way. So the program, our program focuses on building capacity and enhancing awareness through training and outreach, strengthening female representation in professional and leadership roles, increasing accountability through measurable indicators, reporting structures and gender focal point networks, expanding partnerships with member states, industry stakeholders, and UN agencies. As demonstrated here. The ICAO Global Aviation Summits have become powerful platforms for collective action. From the 21st to the 23rd July this year, the ISAF region will host the ICAO Global Aviation Gender Summit in Angola. And this is the third Global Gender Aviation Summit, bringing together stakeholders committed to reshaping the face of aviation. We invite you, and I'm sure Tosca will come with a group. It is to pursue careers across the aviation spectrum. Additionally, ICAO is collaborating with UN Women to equip states with practical tools to conduct gender analysis, because you need data, you need information within the aviation sectors, strengthening evidence-based policymaking and accountability. Then we have the Next Generation of Aviation Professionals program. ICAO also recognizes a critical reality. The aviation industry is expanding rapidly, yet we face a global shortage of pilots, air traffic controllers, engineers, technicians, and aviation leaders. This is a challenge, but it's also an extraordinary opportunity. Through the Next Generation of Aviation Professionals, NGAP program, ICAO is working to inspire, attract, and educate, and retain young talent, including the talented women I have seen in this room. So NGAP focuses on advocacy, outreach and knowledge sharing, workforce forecasting and planning, education and training alignment with industry needs, capacity development and implementation support. The future aviation workforce must reflect the diversity of the world it serves, and that future must include more women not only as participants, but as shapers. I use your word. That's not even the word that's here. I like it. So, in a call to, as a call to accelerate action, in conclusion, so as we look ahead, the responsibility rests with all of us. Employers must build equitable workplaces. Policymakers must champion protective and enabling legislation. Society must challenge limiting norms and expectations, and women must continue to support, mentor, and advocate for one another. So, distinguished colleagues, let us leave this forum not merely inspired, but committed. Committed to dismantling the outdated barriers, committed to measurable progress, committed to building an aviation sector that is inclusive, diverse, safe, and equitable. The sky has never been the limit. It is simply the beginning. And thank you.
And there we had it from the Women in Aviation, celebrating Women in Aviation, for them to actually not just be inspired, but work together, collaborate together in what they call usually a male-dominated field. And we've come to realize that there are still those mostly male-dominated fields, but women are taking up spaces now in those particular fields. One speaker said she's now living out her brothers. We need to walk side by side with our brothers because, yes, the work is for all of us, and collectively and working together, whether male or female, will actually help us to get ahead. But nonetheless, the call is to the women to help one another to also take up opportunity and upskill themselves and also identify their weaknesses and work on them. But of course, this right here is on the Reader News Analysis. Let's pause here now. Perhaps you would like to air opinions, contributions, ask questions. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. I should see you after the commercial break.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka okone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwa tafanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kongerewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu oma filane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda do inawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngejefa omarudi dayo loka okone ushendi finawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu omafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. Now it's time for news beyond the borders of Namibia. Now, you know, we always start off regionally, then move over to continental news. Thereafter, international news comes your way right here on the radar news analysis. Now we're starting off in South Africa, where five miners, those that work in the mine, are still trapped underground.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before. Like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Okay, let's get into the news beyond the borders of Namibia.
We cross live now to SABC News reporter Ulrich Hendricks at the Ikapa mine in Kimberley. A very good afternoon to you, Ulrich. Of course, this is a story that we have continued to watch as Kimberley waits with bated breath and loved ones looking for answers. Talk to us about the latest.
Oh, well, it's over 60 hours now that the miners are trapped underground, about more than 800 kilometers, meters underground. And so rescue operations still continuing. Earlier today, about an hour and a half ago, we saw huge trucks with large pipes entering the premises of Ikapa. Of course, this will be used to pump water and mud from that shaft so that rescue workers can actually go down and safely to get access to the five trapped miners. Of course, at the moment, still no contact with the miners there, and so they're hoping with the new aggressive pumping that they have been employing since last night, enough water and mud will be pumped out so that the rescue operation can continue. One of the people who's been closely watching, who's been here since Tuesday, since it began, is Nomsa Simolofo Maase. Tell us, in terms of the latest update that you guys are getting as a stakeholder of Ikapa Mineral Mines, what is the latest?
The latest is the rescue team, they are going to the 835 level, where they pump the muddy, and then there's still a lot of water, and that water comes with the mud rush. So the people are still trapped. That is the latest news. But we are surprised. However, we are surprised that the operation is still operating as normal as it is here at Ikapa. Thank you very much.
So have you been in contact with the families of the five men? I can just imagine that it must be heartbreaking, almost 3 days without, seeing the people, knowing exactly what has happened.
Apparently, we are not contacted with their family members because of the management of Ikapa. They are not giving us the names of the people who are trapped under the ground.
And the Minister of Mineral and Resources, Gwede Mantashe, expected to visit tomorrow. As a stakeholder, as an affected party, what will you be telling them?
If the Minister, Gwede Mantashe, will come here tomorrow, apparently we will tell him everything that we experienced during these past 2-3 days that we are here, and everything that happens. Also, the management will tell them their side, will tell Gwede Mantashe our side.
Thank you very much. Nomsa, of course, talking there to us about, saying that communication is a bit bad between them and the company because they are not in in contact with the families that are affected with this tragedy. Of course, as you can see behind us also, you see a few men who are actually former mine workers here at Ikapa. They've also been here since Tuesday, since that news broke of the five men who have been trapped in that shaft. Basically coming here every single day from morning until evening, you know, basically holding vigil to say that, you know, we're thinking about you and we hope that you come out of this alive. Like I said, the contact between rescuers and the five trapped men are not yet established. So at the moment, we really do not have any idea in what condition the men are.
Ulrich, as rescue operations continue on one end, just listening to what the NUMSA representative has said, it seems that it's still business as usual for Ikapa Mine, continuing with the work of the day. What has management had to say?
Well, yesterday when we spoke to them, they usually gives us one update per day. They haven't done that today, except to say that they are now aggressively pumping and they're hoping that that will be done soon. So operations or mining operations are, they've stopped for the moment, of course, but we do see people from administration and people critical posts like electricity, etc., still up working here, but mining obviously have stopped. We also spoke about yesterday when we last spoke to them about, you know, what caused this mud rush, and they were basically saying that, you know, this is an old mine that was actually mined by the beers in the old days, and you know, so it is prone to mud rushes, but they put systems in place to prevent that. But in the last 3 months, Kimberley has received a lot of rain as well, and they're saying that, you know, despite them putting in certain safety measures, you know, the mud rush did occur.
Very well. Thank you very much. The latest on a developing story, our reporter Ulrich Hendricks coming to us live from Ikapa Mine in Kimberley, where five miners remain trapped underground. Of course, the details, insofar as their names are concerned, still have not been released by management. We do continue to keep a close eye on that story and other breaking news stories that we're watching, with more news coming up on the other side of this. Stay with us.
You know, statistics in South Africa reveal that 7.7% of employees at universities are foreign nationals. How relevant that is? Okay, relevant.
Parliament's Higher Education Committee has warned universities and TVET colleges not to abuse immigration or labor laws. It comes after concerns that some institutions are hiring foreign nationals for jobs that are not listed as critical skills. Now, while many qualified South Africans do remain unemployed, the committee says schools must follow the law and improve their vetting processes. Debogo Letsea is the chair of the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and joins us now for more. Debogo, I don't know if we can maybe just start by highlighting how big a problem this really is. How much is this happening?
Now, good morning to yourself, Arabidat. Good morning to the viewers of Newsroom Africa, and thanks for having us. I think, you know, yesterday when we had the meeting with the department, it was actually the second attempt we attempted to have this meeting. So you'll remember that last year we had, we went to the university, CUT, Central University of Technology. This is where really this thing came to the fore before us, and then a lot of South Africans shared a lot of stats saying so many foreign nationals are employed at this institution and that institution. We then decided maybe let's dig a little deeper and then talk to the department to get us these statistics. I mean, how many foreign nationals are employed in each of our institutions, be it at universities, TVET colleges, and CET colleges? What kind of work are they doing there? Is it critical skills and all of that? And then the department took long to get us this accurate information. We then decided let's have a joint meeting with Home Affairs, which is responsible for putting together the critical list, skills list of the country, and the Department of Labor, which is the custodians of the Employment Act, of either the Immigration Act or the Employment Service Act of this country. And then yesterday, the Department of Labor could not join us last year. We then decided to postpone the meeting. Then yesterday, again, they sent us an apology late, and we could not postpone the meeting. So what then happened in the meeting is that the department presented the statistics. At our universities, they presented the statistics that about 7.7% of the employees at our institutions are foreign nationals. Obviously, they've got this principle that they call the internationalization policy, which means that they have a responsibility to bring in international talent, which is what we're not fighting against, as long as it follows the rules of the country. And then the department, their report was really, the data was not accurate. They also indicated to us that their data was not audited, the one that they brought us, and we indeed said to them they must go and get us an audited data, because we can't speak with authority on data that tomorrow might come.
Sure. So that means that there isn't necessarily a figure that is correct or incorrect. And I say that just because, for example, the University of Fort Hare has an 8.28% percentage of foreign staff, right? You have the University of the Western Cape sitting at just over 8%. Same with Wits University. Salt Lake University is just under 8%, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And one, these numbers, as you said, not necessarily as fully verified as they would need to be. But we're also not saying that that is bad or good, right? Because the skills required, the critical skills required, may be such that one needs more than the other. But we're saying, are they in the right positions? Do we have that for a fact?
Yeah, no, thank you very much. In fact, maybe I should have said that the unverified data that the department gave us was on the non-permanent staff members. So everything else on the permanent staff members of the universities, the department informed us that those ones are verified because they were audited in the previous financial year. So the ones that are not verified are the temporary staff members. But Home Affairs then clarified how they give one a work visa in South Africa. So one, you must be offered a position in South Africa. They give you a visa based on that particular position, but also at that particular institution. So if, for an example, I was offered a position to be a dean at the University of Free State, and then during the period of my work visa, I then apply for a position to be a dean at the University of Fort Hare, they would have indicated to us that that is not allowed, because the person will then have to go and reapply to get in. So when we ask the department, are we sure about those that are permanent and those that are temporary, if they followed this process, the department could not really inform us. I mean, the Department of Higher Education data collection is so bad, because, as for an example, they could not even understand a simple, difference between permanent residency and a naturalized South African. Because permanent residency, they do have an ID, but the ID at the end there would have a 1-8 instead of the 0-8. You know, you and I, our IDs are 0-8. The last three numbers, they started with 0-8. But if you are a permanent resident, it would mean 1-8. What is the difference? The difference will be that those with 1-8 don't vote, don't have the full rights as South Africans. They may have an ID, but they don't have the full rights. But those with the naturalized South Africans or foreigners will have a 0-8 number. What is the difference there? In terms of employment, it will mean that those with 08 ID number, they have full rights as South Africans, and those without, they are not. Now, the department would then learn yesterday that there's a guy who was a principal here at the College of Cape Town, very bad. I mean, there's a report that came out now that indicated just bad things. You know, when Trump says bad things are happening there, bad things were happening at the College of Cape Town. What did the department do? The department comes and says to us that they have shortlisted this person who, number one, is not a naturalized South African, but a permanent resident South African.
Sure.
When South African had applied for that particular job. So this is just an example that department itself don't understand what that means. And we're going to follow up on that particular issue because we've then informed them that if they don't do it well, we'll then have to open cases because they are clearly stumbling on the Immigration Act.
Start with breaking news about Andrew.
Let's move on to other news where allegedly the son of the former Zimbabwean president allegedly shot a guard.
Paul Sithole there. Indeed, we bring you breaking news this hour. We understand that a son of a former president has shot a guard. The details are, of course, sketchy at this point. We have SABC News senior reporter Criselda Lewis at the scene to just bring us the very latest. A very good afternoon to you, Criselda. Very disturbing news we're hearing. Just share with us what exactly has happened or is happening.
Well, Mfundo, these are live pictures just in Hyde Park here in Johannesburg with what I'm looking at now to be members of the task force and other members of the South African Police Service in conversation with, and I'm not sure if I can do this at this particular time because what SABC News understood you would see right there towards that direction is the son of the former late president of Zimbabwe, which is Robert Mugabe. That is Balmain Mugabe, who is behind me. And it looks like police are just about to arrest him. The allegation, as we understand it at the stage, in fact, he is handcuffed. Come a little bit this way. You'll see Balmain Mugabe, who is with the white, with the black shirt over there. The allegation is that at this particular stage, he's alleged to have shot someone. Details are very, very sketchy at this particular point. And And you can see he is handcuffed together with somebody else at this particular stage. This is breaking news at this particular point. The allegation is that I can see that Balmain Mugabe, who is the son of the late former Zimbabwean president, Robert Mugabe, right behind me. He is in handcuffs. The allegation, I must tell you, Mfondo, I do not have much details at this stage, but the allegation is that someone has been shot and has been taken to hospital for treatment. And now, as a result, a couple of moments ago, police had been negotiating with Balmain Mugabe to come out of these premises where I believe he stays. And he seems to be handcuffed with the two individuals at this stage. The discussions they are having at this particular time. Just take a look there. I'm going to ask my colleague, Bulelani Scott, just to point towards that direction. And two people are now in handcuffs at this stage. But one I can confirm to be that of Balmain Mugabe, who is the son of the former late president of Zimbabwe. The son of the late former president of Zimbabwe. But what we can confirm for you at this particular time is from what I have seen after SABC News got the tip-off about the son of a former president having to allegedly believed to have shot a guard. That is what we are hearing at this particular stage. And right behind me, in fact, as soon as police opened these gates, I did see Balmain Mugabe, who is the son of the late former president president of Zimbabwe. He is in handcuffs as we speak, and he's handcuffed together with a second individual. The details are still very sketchy. There is not a police officer at this stage who is tasked to speak to the media at this point. So I'm really going on what I have seen with the naked eye, Mfundo, and that is that Balamane Mugabe, the son of the former, late president of Zimbabwe, Robert Mugabe, is in handcuffs right behind me. The allegation is that someone is said to have been shot. That person is allegedly in a critical condition, has already been taken to hospital. Those are the details that I have at this stage, and I know that these police had been brought in to try and negotiate with Balamane Mugabe and the other individual to come out of the house. It took quite a little bit to try and get them out. There had also been some negotiations on the phone. Between police and Balamane Mugabe, who was inside. And I must say, let me just clarify to the viewer, the only reason why I am mentioning the name is because right behind me, as the cameras had been rolling, what I did see here behind me was Balamane Mugabe in those handcuffs. I do not know at this particular stage whether he's going to be charged with anything. I can only deduce from the fact that he's got those handcuffs on that police suspect him of doing something. What SABC News understands at this point, it's...
And that particular son, Balamane Mugabe, is living in South Africa. The comments are rolling to see his father was president in Zimbabwe, yet they go on and live in another country for more convenience, obviously. It's something to really question in that regard. But nonetheless, Nigeria's president, Bola Tinubu warns that terrorist activities are threats to development. But the question is, what is he doing about it?
For nearly a decade, Benjamin Polycarp has been plastering walls on construction sites in Nigeria's capital. It's a life shaped by survival, not by choice. 13 years ago, he was a student back home in Gwoza, Borno State, hoping to become a structural engineer. Then insurgents attacked his community. He fled after members of his family were killed. Today, he works as a mason, far from the future he once imagined.
I don't miss plenty things for my life.
I have missed a lot of opportunities in my life. Even this job I am currently doing is not what I planned for my life. But for the insecurity, I would have gone far in life. Many times I flash back to when I was in school. I would have finished school and gone further in life.
Insecurity and I did this opposite.
Benjamin is one of more than 3 million displaced Nigerians, according to the International Organization for Migration. Nigeria has faced insurgent violence for over 15 years, and attacks have spread beyond the northeast. Experts say regional instability and weak border cooperation are making the threat harder to control, especially after some countries changed to military-led governments.
Immediately, Nigeria took what I could term as a hard stand against the military rulers in those countries. Nigeria has to take the fall because they are not there to cooperate with us.
Analysts say the crisis is worsened by insufficient security personnel and poor intelligence sharing, adding that without stronger public trust and cooperation, security agencies cannot succeed alone.
The Nigerian citizens sees insecurity fight as that of government and the criminals. The reasons being that lack of trust in government by the Nigerian citizens. But in fairness, citizens are supposed to own this fight up to 70%. That is only when the security forces can do their work effectively.
Nigeria is also turning to international partners for support. The United States deployed troops to help train Nigerian forces, while other allies are providing equipment and intelligence support.
With America's arrival here with their troops, I think it will make a lot of difference, positive difference. They are coming with training, technological support and all what support you have, which we need at this particular time.
Years of violence have killed thousands, displaced millions, and slowed development across several regions. Experts say lasting results will depend on stronger local policing, better intelligence sharing, tighter borders, and closer cooperation between citizens and security agencies. For Benjamin and many others, security is not just a policy goal. It's a difference between survival and a second chance at the future. Kelechi Emekalam, CGTN Abuja, Nigeria.
Now for some international news, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has been arrested on suspicion of misconduct in the public office.
Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, the BBC understands that he has been arrested on suspicion of misconduct in public office. That's from our correspondent who has found that information out. Just for context, we heard this morning from the Prime Minister in an interview that nobody is above the law when he was asked about Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, but he declined to say whether the former prince should volunteer himself to the UK police. We now understand, though, that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, the former Prince Andrew, has been arrested on suspicion of misconduct in public office. So just to give you some more context on this, this is clearly linked to the files that have been coming out about Jeffrey Epstein. And we understand that Thames Valley Police has been assessing allegations that a woman was sent to the UK by Jeffrey Epstein for a sexual encounter with Mr. Mountbatten Windsor, and the encounter allegedly occurred at the former prince's residence, Royal Lodge, in 2010. The woman, who's not British, was in her 20s at the time. And the woman's lawyer said that after spending the night with Mountbatten Windsor at the Royal Lodge in 2010, the woman alleges she was given tea and a tour of Buckingham Palace. Now, we've also, clearly, those are some of the links that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has always denied any wrongdoing on the matters of the links with Jeffrey Epstein to do with sexual matters. But he is also being investigated for his role as a trade envoy. MPs might be looking into his conduct while he was working as a trade envoy for the UK. The Today programme heard from Liam Byrne, who said that his committee, the Business and Trade Committee, which is a cross-party committee, would be meeting next Tuesday to decide how we might or might not take this investigation forward. Now, we understand from the latest files released by the US Department of Justice that the former prince forwarded sensitive government documents and commercial information to the convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. As I've mentioned, Andrew has always denied any wrongdoing. MPs have been taking the allegations acutely seriously, according to Mr. Byrne, and they said that they guarantee that MPs are not in the market for letting anything slip through the cracks. Right, for context, the former Duke of York served as UK trade envoy for between 2001 and 2011, and in this role he travelled globally and enjoyed privileged access to senior government and business contacts around the world. In 2010, Andrew appears to have forwarded government reports from visits to Vietnam, Singapore and China to Epstein, according to the recently published files. And the documents also appear to show Andrew forwarded Epstein information on investment opportunities in gold and uranium in Afghanistan. So to recap, if you're just joining us, the BBC understands that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has been arrested. And as you'll recall, he has been living at Wood Farm on the Sandringham Estate. Now, the documents, as I was talking about, under official guidance, trade envoys have a duty of confidentiality over sensitive commercial or political information about their official visits. I understand we can now join Lucy Manning, who's the one who's been breaking the story. And Lucy, tell us what you know.
Good morning. Well, my understanding is that there has been a very significant development in the investigation into the Epstein files, and Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has been arrested this morning on suspicion of misconduct in public life. That goes back to documents when he was a trade envoy that are alleged to have been passed to Epstein. It was actually the Mail Online this morning that had some pictures of what looked like police officers near the Sandringham estate, and I was able to confirm that there has been an arrest made this morning. We are expecting a statement from the police force. It is Thames Valley Police who have been looking into the allegations against Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. They've been looking into sexual allegations and misconduct in public life. My understanding is this arrest is just about the misconduct in public life, and obviously a very significant moment that the former Prince Andrew has been arrested. He has previously strenuously denied any wrongdoing on any of these matters related to Epstein.
Tell us a little bit about what it means, the misconduct in public office. How serious a charge might that be?
Well, it is a serious charge, and it does involve people who were in positions of authority misusing their office either for criminal or personal gain. We must stress at the moment they are only allegations, and the police will have more information and research and investigations that they need to do. It is Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's birthday today, and he will have now marked this birthday being arrested by British police. It is fairly, outstanding, astonishing, really, that a member, he's still, is it eighth or ninth in line to the throne, that a member of the royal family, although he doesn't have those royal titles anymore, the king's brother, has been arrested by British police in relation to these Epstein allegations.
And on that, Lucy, how damaging is it to the royal family? We've seen that on outings recently, other members of the royal family have been asked questions about this. What is the likely fallout of it now, escalating to him, to Andrew Mountbatten Windsor actually being arrested?
Well, it is extremely damaging. There are unanswered questions for the royal family itself that they haven't answered. We've had two statements from members of the royal family previously about their thoughts with the victims in Epstein. They have tried to cut Andrew Mountbatten Windsor off, losing the royal titles and distancing themselves from him. But I think there is a feeling that the royal family will have to say more and do more. Obviously, they won't want to get involved in any way with the police investigation ongoing, but I think many people feel that there are questions to answer.
And with that, we have come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dingi program with Aloisa Shimi. Goodbye.